Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. Are you using your power tools? Would you like more power tools? How about getting some power in your life? And to do that, we're going to be speaking with the author of a book called Power Tools, The Ultimate Owner's Manual for Personal Empowerment. And so I'm so happy to have the author of Power Tools on the show with us, Jean Adrian. Jean, welcome.
Hi, and thank you so much for having me on your show, Peter. I really appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts and share my book with your audience.
Well, I really enjoyed reading your book. It's inspiring. It's inspiring to be conditioned by a book.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of us need conditioning. We need to remember to use our tools to do the work on ourselves that is so important. And you talk about that we shouldn't put these tools away after we use them.
No, nor the owner's manual. You know, that's why I called it an owner's manual. I mean, how many things have we bought, like TVs and DVR, DVD players and things like that? You know, and we open the box and we get so excited about the new toy and we just kind of pitch the owner's manual into a pile somewhere. And it stays there and sometimes gets lost until we have a problem. And then we have to go searching for that owner's manual, and then we actually perhaps read it to try to figure out what can I do to fix this problem. So I think my goal in writing this book was to give people an owner's manual that they could read before they bump up against the problems in life, the things that block us from being able to create the things that we want.
Well, I like that you found metaphors for this in our power tools. I know men are more interested in power tools, but I think a lot of women can identify with the purpose of each one.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure how many people actually use jackhammers, but I think a jackhammer is a great tool. Can you talk about how can we use our jackhammer?
Yeah, you know, and the jackhammer is not something most of us have personal experience with, but we know what they are. I mean, we've certainly seen them when people are doing massive construction jobs and they need to break up old cement and old foundations. And that's really what the metaphor of the jackhammer is all about. We've all taken on these foundational beliefs that we believe to be true. In many cases, we don't even have a clue where we started believing things like, I have to really work hard and struggle in order to make a living. Money's the root of all evil. When things get too good, the other shoe's going to drop and everything's going to just kind of go to hell in a handbasket, that kind of stuff. You know, but we probably heard them. Most of the times we heard them growing up. You know, and little children, before they're 5 years old or so, they really can't tell the difference between what's real and what's not real or what's true and what's not true. So we're like little sponges when we're children, and we absorb all the stuff that our parents say around us or that we hear in school or Sunday school or whatever, and we assume that it's true because the big people said that, so, wow, that must be true. And we file it away, and we think that it is, and it becomes one of our foundational beliefs. So one of the critical paths that we need to step on in order to be able to stand in our power to be the creator of our reality, which we all are by divine right, is to identify those foundational beliefs that are not appropriate for us anymore, that we really don't believe, and that they're not in resonance with us at the heart level. So the jackhammer is the tool that you use to go in there and identify them and break them up.
It's amazing, though, how much conditioning there is in childhood.
Yeah.
And I speak with people all the time whose parents really hammered them with not a jackhammer, more like concrete and mm-hmm. cement.
Yeah, the 2x4.
with actually really negative input about what you're good at and what you're not good at, especially mm-hmm. what you're not good at.
Right.
They don't want to be disappointed in you. So they're warning you, don't do things that might disappoint them.
Yeah, you know, and some of it is innocent. Don't stick your finger into the light socket. You know, don't run out into the street after your ball. You know, things like that. You know, they're saying them to protect us. But so many of us come out of our childhood with beliefs that we're A, not good enough, B, not safe, you know, and it goes on and on through the alphabet of those beliefs. And the jackhammer tool and part of the exercises in that chapter have to do with kind of really doing a personal inventory on what you believe and what you don't believe, because you can't create unless you're creating from your truth. It doesn't work. You've got to be in integrity and in alignment with what is your real truth and your core values. So I suggest to the listeners that you take a piece of paper. For me, it took a legal pad and a pen, and start writing on the paper all the things that you believe to be true. Really kind of get into it. Go into sort of a relaxed place and give yourself permission to come up with, you know, far-fetched stuff that you believe to be true, but lay them all out. When I did this exercise, Peter, at the end of the exercise, I had filled a complete yellow pad with beliefs. And then what I did was I went back and down the left-hand margin, I wrote where I thought I got that belief, you know. What was the earliest place that I remember hearing that? Was it my mom? Was it my dad? Was it my grandmother or a teacher or somebody on the television or, you know, whatever? And I just made a note of where I thought I got it. And my third pass through the list was to do a sanity check on that list and see if I really resonated with that belief anymore. And I got really brutal with that and, you know, and crossed out the things that are not yours anymore, or relanguage them into something that you are happy with. And at the end of that exercise, for me, I had about 10 things that were really, really important beliefs for me that I would have to say were my core values. And I was able to, from that, begin to extrapolate what is my truth.
Because,
you know,
yeah.
Another piece of the limiting beliefs has to do with the stories that get laid on us. You know, as a young girl, you know, girls are taught, you know, you have to be a good girl, and good girls don't do this, or good girls don't do that, and good girls do this. And then as I got older, I was called upon to, you know, become a good mother, a good wife, and here's what that means. And then, you know, a good employee, having a good credit rating, having, you know, maintaining a lifestyle, and you know, it just gets on and on and on until pretty soon we've built a reality for ourselves that in many cases we don't even really remember who we really are.
Well,
underneath
it's,
that.
It's also helpful to be conditioned by others in positive ways.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of us, everybody is insecure in one way or another. And so it's always great, and I always tell people who compliment me, I always thank them, and I say, you don't realize that it really is important. I don't take that for granted. I'm so happy to be recognized and acknowledged. Last night I had a class, and it was an intuitive class, so I worked with each student in the class, and the class was, what is your gift in life? Or among your gifts, what do I see intuitively? And I only hear, you know, I sit there, I have no idea what I'm going to say next because I wait to receive information.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what comes through and inspires these people, the students in the class. It's fantastic, the details that come through on the powers that these people hold. And they all could identify with what I was saying, but they never embraced it as much. But because of the class, they're really being conditioned. And many were there with their friends, and their friends said, yeah, you're just like that. You needed to hear it from him.
Exactly. You know, so many times we give our power away to something outside ourselves to give us an identity. And in this case, you're giving them a positive identity, but so many times we give our power away to people who give us, you know, the negative stuff.
Sure.
Regardless, it's giving our power away.
I started my own manufacturing company many years ago, and from scratch, and I didn't know what I was doing, but I thought I knew.
Mm-hmm.
I had no background in it. And I had an accountant. And after I had a warehouse full of product that I wasn't yet selling, he said, you're bound to fail.
Wow.
This is set up for you to lose. And I immediately fired him. And I was profitable every year that I owned the business until I sold it.
Good for you.
So there are so many people out there who really aren't supportive, and we do have to use our jackhammer on them.
Absolutely, yeah. And not necessarily on them, but on what we took away from them, you know. And we're responsible for that. You know, because
sure.
we do it at an unconscious level early on. But, you know, once you get, you know, to be at least over the age of puberty, then you're called upon to be accountable and responsible for the stuff that you allow people to lay on you.
Well, you make a very important point of that in the book. There's one part where you talk about somebody who was afraid of reptilians.
Oh, yeah. I love that story.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and Eric is a dear, dear friend of mine, and, you know, he's a gifted healer, but, you know, before he actually awoke to his gift, you know, he was in computers, you know, so he really, it was something that kind of came onto him very slowly, but once he started waking up, he started taking classes. And he took a class, and this particular class happened to be about the things that can attack you. And this woman's particular thing of choice were ETs. And, you know, she told them about the little gray people that come from some planet and, you know, and the reptilians that come from another planet and the draconians that come from another planet. And she really filled his head with all of this information about beings that are not from planet Earth, humans. And he was fascinated by it. And by the time he got home, he was being visited by them. I mean, he's an empath, and, you know, he took it all in, hook, line, and sinker, because she was a person of authority, and he was pretty new on his path. And these beings were literally attacking him. They were hurting him. He got sick, and after about 6 months of this, he was so ill that his parents were taking him from doctor to doctor, trying to find out what's wrong with Eric. And of course, they could never find the source of the illness, but he was losing weight. He wasn't sleeping, you know, and it went on and on and on. And, of course, he couldn't tell the doctor, well, it's these little gray men that are coming in and, you know, doing surgery on me and experimenting with my body and, you know, whatever else. And it just built up over time to he was getting very desperate. And he saw an advertisement in a Toronto newspaper. He lives in Montreal, and he saw an advertisement in a Toronto newspaper for a woman who said that she could rid people of ET attacks. And he just was like, I'm in my car, I'm gone. And he went there, made an appointment. And when he showed up, the woman said, wow, Eric, you must really be something special. And Eric goes, oh, what are you talking about? She said, well, the king of all the reptilians that are on Earth right now was here an hour ago, and he asked me to work with you to make you leave him alone, them alone. And Eric goes, what? They're the ones that are attacking me. And she says, no, they are part of your belief system, and because you believe that they can hurt you, then they have to hurt you because they have to honor your belief. And they want you just to change your beliefs and leave them alone so they can get about their business doing what they do, which is not necessarily hurting people. And he got it, and he's never been bothered by anything like that since he left that woman's office. She did exactly what she said she could do. She rid him of the attacks that he was getting from the ETs. But, you know, basically, he was creating it
right.
with his own belief.
And that's such an important metaphor, because we can use that on everybody who gives us a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
We are holding our own creation in our laps of our lives. And
exactly.
And people read that. And they respond to that, and they show up, and they give us exactly who we believe we are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can call it mirroring if you want to, but everyone in your reality is reflecting back to you some aspect of yourself, whether it's your greatness or whether it's a piece of you that needs to be healed.
It's amazing how responsible we need to become. And so there's a lot in the book about how to live more powerfully in ways that overcome our weaknesses. I like the tools a lot because they give us something useful to work with. And right after we work with the jackhammer, I like the fact that you brought in the vacuum cleaner.
Oh, yeah. You just got to clean up the mess,
yeah.
You know. It's one thing to identify the emotional and mental debris that we carry, and we carry it inside our bodies and we carry it out in our fields. And it's really quite interesting that, you know, it appears to be random stuff. You know, I'm somewhat visual, and when I look at a person's field, I will see shapes floating around inside their body and out in their field. Most of them look like platonic solids to me, you know, geometric shapes. But some of them look like stuff. You know, maybe it's an arrow. Maybe it's a heart. Who knows? But anyway, they're not actually random. We're very methodical about where we put our wounds. We put them in our chakra system, and we put them in our acupuncture meridian points. And then those things have in our spiritual, mental, and emotional bodies, they've got, you know, the same chakras and the same meridian points exist in your etheric bodies as well. So the stuff that looks like it's just floating randomly out in your field is actually probably a mental construct or an emotional construct or a spiritual construct in a chakra or in an acupuncture point of one of those etheric bodies.
I'm just picturing, instead of going to an acupuncturist, you just get out your vacuum cleaner.
Well, yeah. You know? Now, and at some point in the course of our consciousness, Peter, we're going to realize that that is, in fact, all we have to do.
True, because we can empower our vacuum cleaner. We can turn it on, run it over our bodies, and just because we believe that it's pulling stuff out, we might feel a lot cleaner and empowered from that.
Absolutely. You know, the truth is, and this is my truth, take what you want and leave the rest. My truth is that anything that we need to change or heal relative to ourselves, we can do with our attention and our intention.
Right.
By putting our attention on what we want to change and then using our intention to shift it to a higher vibration.
Well, a lot of what you talk about in the book is detachment and asking, you know, what is it that we really need to hold on to?
Nothing. But that's hard.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I'm the queen of attachment, you know, have been for 60 some odd years. I got to tell you, when way back in the day when I wanted to learn how to water ski, and the tried and true method of teaching people how to water ski was to start you off on two skis because it was easier to get you out of the water, and I was able to do that, but I was never really comfortable with both of my legs kind of being not connected and, you know, bumping up and down separately. I was always wobbling, and I was watching all these people on their slalom skis, and I thought, that's what I want to do because that is much more secure to me. It's a single point of contact with the water, and I just know if I could do that, I would be a lot more comfortable. And so I tried to learn how to slalom ski, and how they teach you to do that is to take your foot out of one of the boots and then just pick your foot up and put it behind on the single ski. Peter, I let people pull me all over Lake Lanier for miles and hours on end with my big toe in the boot where I needed to just pick it up and drop that ski, but I was so attached to the fact that that was a security thing for me that I never did learn how to slalom ski that way. In fact, I'm very stubborn. I finally taught myself to deep water start rather than let go of that second ski.
Wow, that's hard. I used to be a water ski instructor.
Yeah.
And I know the nuances of all of that, and I always had trouble starting on one ski. It was always easier to kick one off.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm impressed.
Well, and I actually wrote an article about that for Water Ski Magazine because I was like, you know, if you're having trouble, you don't have to be limited. You can do it this way, and here's a surefire way to do a deep water slalom start. You know, but that's a whole other story for a whole other different day.
Yeah, sure, but it's fun talking about that.
Yeah, but, you know, we get attached to everything. We're attached to our stuff. You know, we think our stuff, you know, negate or makes identifies who we are, defines who we are. We get attached to money. We get attached to jobs. People will stay, and I'm guilty of this. People will stay in a job that they're miserable at, way longer than they need to, and many times until the job gets rid of them, so that they can get on their path and go find, you know, what would really be the right path for them. But one of the things that I find most common among my clients and people that I speak with is we're really attached to being right.
Right.
You know, and we'll hang on to our rightness until basically everybody leaves around us, you know, because they don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah.
And that attachment to being right has been the source of all these religious wars that we've had. In fact, most wars have to do with people being attached to being right. That's one of the first attachments that needs to be severed and released.
But it's about right and wrong is very hard for people to discern, to let go of, because, for instance, we can forgive a lot easier if we can get rid of that.
Oh, absolutely. And the truth is that, you know, there are a million shades of gray in between the black and the white of right and wrong.
Sure.
You know, and everybody is entitled to have an opinion. And, you know, it's honoring of everyone else to allow them to actually have that opinion. In fact, it's when we don't accept other people's opinions that a lot of these wounds that we stuff into our chakras, into our acupuncture meridian points, that's where they get set up, when we don't accept that people have a right to their opinion. They say something, you know, you might say something really hateful to me and judgmental, and if I let it hurt my feelings and if I store that thing that you said inside my heart and I took it to be true, then I've stored a wound in my heart. Whereas I could, another alternative would be to say, well, you know, Peter, I understand that that's how you feel. I don't agree with it, but you're entitled to your opinion.
See, then that's a matter of how big or not you feel about yourself versus
exactly.
others.
Exactly.
And so that's why conditioning is so helpful, and having a book like this is helpful, because it allows us to know ourselves better.
Mm-hmm.
And to come from that place where we see ourselves tripping ourselves up.
I got to tell you, you know, I don't know that there are any brand new concepts that are in the book. But, you know, I'm trying to, you know, at least make people aware that they do have possibilities, and that there, you know, there is a field of possibility that stands in front of all of us. And every moment of every day, we can make choices into that field of pure potential. And then begin to create from our choices.
Well, I think the book is about remembering ourselves better and having more perspective, even though we might have heard a lot of it, but not in the way that you put it, not in the context of the book, that conditions us in more powerful ways.
Yeah, I did try to write this book different than any of my other books, because I wanted to really get a different perspective, so that maybe, you know, with this one I might be able to grab people's attention. You know, if only for a moment. I mean, if you read the book and you come away with just one thing that makes you come a little bit closer to realizing your own greatness and stepping into your power, then I've done what I wanted to do.
Well, you had a nice a metaphor or an example of using a large ball to put your hopes and desires into. And I love that
exercise. Yeah, you know, I think all of us are familiar with the snow globe, you know, and usually they come out around Christmas time and you turn them upside down and it snows on the scene inside there. But what if you had a giant snow globe for yourself that you could build for yourself everything you want? You know, and I give you permission to do this. You can do it with me right now. Just envision that you have a snow globe and put inside that snow globe all the things that you would like to create in your life. So for me, you know, I want a silver tray that is just stacked with bundles of $100 bills. And every time I take away one of those bundles of $100 bills to go spend it somewhere, another one comes to replace it. And, you know, I want a healthy body. I want loving relationships in every area of my life. So I'm going to picture all of my family and my friends, you know, inside that snow globe. And, and you're allowed to put even grander things than you could even possibly imagine.
Go crazy about it.
Exactly. And then when you're done, then there's probably two or three things you've forgotten. So when you think you're done, step back and find a couple of more things and chuck them in the snow globe.
Right.
And then seal it up and give it to the universe and say, thank you. This or something better is mine now.
And you can keep on creating more of them. There's no
Absolutely.
End to how many you can have.
That's right. Yeah, there is no lack in the divine mind.
Right.
You know, and there is plenty for us to grow. And just because I get my snow globe full doesn't mean you can't have yours. We both can.
Sure.
And
no,
everybody
can. It sounds
can.
Like a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. And, you know, I believe that that's really the space that we're in now. You know, I think we turned the corner somewhere around the end of last year, and we're into a space of having life abundantly and enjoying it, having fun with it. One of those limiting beliefs is a limiting belief in struggle. And the original root of that is a limiting belief that says, I have to struggle to earn God's love. And then we extrapolate that out through every area of our life. I have to struggle to learn to earn love from a partner, to earn love from my boss, to earn the frequency of love in money. I have to struggle in my job, you know, and it goes on and on and on. But the original limiting belief was about earning and deserving the love of our Creator.
Well,
and that was an unconditional given, and where did we forget that?
Right, and you offer five good ideas, actually. This is where our work should be, in
mm-hmm.
these five ideas that you put in the book here. And one of them you just talked about is to be playful and have fun. And yet the others are so important, is to remember gratitude all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
And remember to bless as much as possible.
You know, and that one is especially important, because how many times do we have mortal moments where we get caught up in fear or in depression, or, you know, we think, oh, woe is me, you know, it's never going to get better, and this, that, and the other. And when that happens, where we really are is where we really are not is in the present moment. Because any time you're in fear or doubt or depression or sadness, you're either worrying or focused on something that's in the past, and, you know, and that's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. And then the other option is that you're worried about the future, or you're focused,
sure.
your energy's focused out into the future, which you have not yet created.
Right. So let's just be present. And
exactly.
and I want to go over the other two that I didn't mention, because we're running out of time.
Okay.
Is surrender and creativity. So if we can remember gratitude, blessing, surrender, creativity, and playfulness, I think that we'll have it made. And that's all in your book, Power Tools, The Ultimate Owner's Manual for Personal Empowerment. It's such a pleasure to talk with you. How can people find you?
Okay, my website is jeanadrienne, JeanAdrienne.com. And visitors to my website, if you sign up for my newsletter, I will give you a free subscription to the online version of my InnerSpeak cards. These are powerful clearing cards that you can use every day to clear away the limiting beliefs and the blocks that hold you back.
So it's so wonderful to talk with you, Jean. And
thank you.
You're doing very important work, and I'm glad you're so productive.
Thank you.
And thanks for being a guest on Energy Stew.
My pleasure.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. And I can be reached at peter@heartriver, HEART river.org, or 212-222-7748. We have plenty of classes in New York, all kinds of opportunities. Check out the website, and thank you so much for listening.